lane, 15-10, touchdown, Chargers!
What's up, guys? Welcome into a brand new episode of Chargers Weekly. As always, joined by Mad Buddy Smith. We are 28 days away from the 2024 NFL Draft. So much to dive into. Obviously, a lot of draft speculation, but the lead this week was Jim Harbaugh speaking at the owners' meetings. He spoke for about 35 minutes or so. And, Buddy, I have a lot of thoughts. First of all, excuse the audio. My computer has crashed multiple times. I've put money through the ringer through the last 25 minutes, so I apologize.
It's all good.
So if my audio is a little tinny this week, I apologize. But, Buddy, like I said, I have a lot of thoughts on Jim Harbaugh, and I know you do too. I'll give you the floor first.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's a reminder of how many football lives, you know, Coach Harbaugh has lived based on that 30-plus minutes that he delivered. I ended up watching a handful of the pressers from general managers and head coaches, and the one thing that you notice is just the number of different voices asking him questions, the number of different people gathered behind him, all the different lines of questioning, a lot, obviously the majority about the Chargers and moving forward, but also about the 49ers in 2011 in his first year. And how did you flip a team that went 6-10 to 13-3? And what were the keys to success there? And can you apply those to 2024 and a Chargers team that was 5-12? There were a ton of questions about success at Michigan and developing players and three-star players that are now, or two stars or five-star, whatever it was, that are now perhaps going to put together the most number of players selected from a single school in a single NFL draft. It's very likely that that's going to happen with Michigan this year. So to me, that was my number one takeaway, just as a big picture in the macro. What I noticed is here's someone who has had so much success at so many different places, and everybody is trying to tap into how do you do it? How did you do it there? How did you do it here? And how are you planning on doing it here? And it's a reminder of what the Chargers got, how lucky we are to have Coach Harbaugh back in the league, and especially for us, selfishly lucky to have him as the head coach of the Bolts.
So, Buddy, Jim said a lot. Let's start with the draft, because there's a potential that top four picks could be quarterbacks, including one of his, J.J. McCarthy.
Pick a great player at five. There's going to be a great player at five. You know, in some ways, you know, there could be – there's talk of, you know, four quarterbacks going in the first four picks. Boy, if that happens, that pick really becomes like the number one pick in the draft. If four quarterbacks go in the first four picks, that's not like the fifth pick anymore. That's like the number one pick of the draft for teams that, you know, have a great quarterback already. So we'll see. I mean, then maybe four quarterbacks don't go in a row. And it's unprecedented that's ever happened, but maybe there's still another quarterback there when the fifth pick comes around and somebody wants to. Again, that would be like the number one pick. It wouldn't be like the calculator for the fifth pick anymore.
So I think that there's a method to Jim's madness, while also believing he thinks that JJ is one of the top quarterbacks in this draft, but that directly benefits the Chargers, because you essentially, and a lot of other teams who already are set at quarterback, would really hold the number one overall pick in the draft at five.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. And I think there's two things to take away from that, Chris. Number one is something that we've talked about repeatedly here, and really most recently on the last pod, based on Daniel Jeremiah's mock. And we said, hey, if the Jets are coming up from 10 and all they're offering is a 2025-2, that ain't going to get it done. And that's essentially what Jim said at the back, what Coach said at the back end of that clip we just played, is we either have the number one non-quarterback in the draft at number five, or we've got one of the top four quarterbacks that now it appears as though teams are trying to jockey to draft. So if you want number five, he's subtly saying, we're open for business. We are interested in talking to you if you want to come up and get number five. But then he also adds there, he used the word calculator. I think what people would be most familiar with is trade chart. But he said, hey, the calculator ain't what it used to be. Yeah, he's saying you are not going to say this pick is worth 1,700 and our pick 10 is worth 1,250, and so we're going to give you a two next year. No. He's saying this is not your standard low rent department store. This is not the dollar store. You want to come shop for pick number five, you're shopping on Rodeo Drive, and you're going to pay a premium. So be prepared to pay a premium if you want us to get out of here, because that's what it's going to cost you. You're either taking a quarterback or you're taking the number one non-quarterback in the draft. And I think just quickly to say the other side of things, Chris, is he's saying, hey, pretty good place for us to be with Justin Herbert, right? I get to select what is perhaps the best player in the draft because everybody puts a premium on quarterbacks. Now at number five, if four quarterbacks go, we get our choice. We get to take who we think is the best player in this draft, and that is how fortunate we are with this particular pick. And then if that is the case, Chris, I think that's where the conversation becomes very interesting in that room for that 15 minutes if they decide they're not being offered enough to trade out and they do stick and pick.
So if you're at number five overall, you're the Chargers, and that makes for an interesting conversation. As you said, we talk about all the teams that are going to potentially trade up for a quarterback. Listen, we've seen teams trade up for other positions as well. Wide receiver. I remember Marcus Davenport. Didn't the Saints give up a lot to get him? So is somebody willing to trade the farm for Marvin Harrison Jr.? You know what I mean? Marvin Harrison Jr. could be a guy that many teams view as the missing piece to their offense. Or is Marvin Harrison Jr. a generational talent that the Chargers say, hey, we just lost Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. Let's bring this guy in on a rookie deal and expect all pro-like production in his first 3 or 4 years at a fraction of the cost. So you're right. They're sitting pretty right now. And it's a matter of if anybody's willing to play ball. And if not, who's the best player on your board? And from the conversations that we had in Indianapolis, it seems to me that the wide receivers are the best players overall on the board compared to any other position in the top 10.
That's what it feels like. And I think you hit a lot of things there, and particularly that someone would probably be willing to give up quite a handsome sum to come up and get Marvin Harrison Jr. if he's there. I know that there's, and you know, Malik Nabers pro day, he lit it up, a 4.35 40, 42 inch vertical. I know all of those explosives are there because you could see it on tape. You knew that that's what he was going to do. But And some people are saying, look, there's teams that have Malik Nabers as the number one receiver. Chris Sims has him as his number one receiver. It still feels like, for the most part, it's Marvin Harrison Jr. It still feels like people view him as a transcendent, generational type talent. And that's why if it goes quarterbacks 1 through 4, that's where I think it gets real interesting. And I have no idea what the Chargers board is going to look like, who they have as the top rated player. What is the gap between Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze? And then when you get into that second tier, Brian Thomas and Roman Wilson and Keon Coleman, like all of these players, Lance McConkey, like I don't know what that looks like. But, you know, that's where the debate comes in. Like, hey, is Marvin Harrison, let's just say it's a ladder with 10 rungs, is he on the 10th rung at the top and then the next wide receiver is on rung 6 or the next player is on rung 7? And that's where they'd be like, we have to stick and pick. I know you want the O-lineman, you know, and I know you want to build through the trenches and maybe you really like this corner, and, you know, you like Mitchell, you like Arnold, but if we just play this out, if we are to string this out to best possible outcome, we believe this is the next Larry Fitzgerald. That's who we think Marvin Harrison Jr. is. So if I told you I can get you the next Larry, what we have evaluated to be someone that is of that caliber, is of that professionalism, is that polished, has that well-rounded of a game right now. If I told you, best case, this guy is going to be Larry Fitz and you've got him for the next 15 years, are you really comfortable taking, best case scenario, the best right tackle in football? What do you want? Like that's your, let's say Joe Alt becomes the best right tackle in football, or I give you Larry Fitzgerald for 15 years. And that's a tough conversation. And that's the type of conversation that we're talking about if they can't trade out of that spot that they're going to have. And it is not an easy one, I would assume.
That's the thing. Joe Alt
I think he played exclusively at left tackle at Notre Dame, correct? So we haven't seen him at right tackle. History lesson for Chargers fans, all right? September 1st, 1996. Do we know what happened on that day? Marvin Harrison Sr. caught his first touchdown pass from Jim Harbaugh as a member of the Indianapolis Colts. Jim Harbaugh has seen Marvin Harrison Jr. across the field for a few years at Ohio State. You think Jim Harbaugh knows a thing or two about Marvin Harrison Sr. and Marvin Harrison Jr.? So it really comes down to that. Like, if Jim thinks that this is a generational player that I can pair with my franchise quarterback for the next several years, and we can kick the can when it comes to giving him that $35 or $40 million a year money that he's going to probably command when his first contract is up, I think that's a pretty nice consolation prize at number five is you take Marvin Harrison Jr. And again, Malik Nabers is in that conversation. Roma Dunze, a lot of people like him just as much. But it's an interesting and I think a very appealing situation for the Chargers. And now it's just a matter of, does anybody want to play ball? Because if they do want to play ball, then I think the conversation gets really interesting, money, about getting a guy like Fuaga, maybe at 11, and then getting best player available at 23. Maybe that is a wide receiver. Maybe it's a guy like Brian Thomas or you get an extra second or whatever. So that's kind of where we are right now, and I just find it fascinating. And I think that Jim is doing great work for JJ, but he's also doing great work for the Chargers.
No doubt. I mean, look at the odds on JJ. You know, it's +2,500 to go number two, and then word leaks out of the league meetings that Washington is incredibly sweet on him, and now he's at +400 to go number two overall. And I don't think there's any question if he ends up going two, you're going to have teams falling over themselves to try to get up for Drake May or Jaden Daniels. So I do think if that's the case, that, you know, is a team willing to trade up for JJ? It does sound like he's got fans that are starting to buy what Jim Harbaugh has been trying to tell us. And that's, look, this guy's it, man. He just did not, he did what he was asked. He did not have to put on a show like some of these other quarterbacks because of the offense that he was in. But like, just to put a wrap on that particular, you know, piece of audio from Coach, I still think what my number one takeaway is, they really want to trade out. They really want to trade out and continue to amass more picks and try to extract a premium. Because I was kind of spitting out a bunch of names, you know, at the wide receiver position. There is still an Addie Mitchell. There is still Ladd McConkey. There is still Roman Wilson. There are guys that are going to be sitting there when they pick at 37 that are probably highly graded and might even be like back end of the first round level grades on some of these guys. And so I think that's something to kind of keep in mind in terms of how they want to play this thing. But that's sort of, just to put a button on it, that's sort of what I'm trying to, if I'm going to read anything into it, it's not, hey, I'm excited to make a pick at five and have my selection of all the non-quarterbacks. No, it's more, come give us a premium, because that's a win as well. If the chart says that pick five is worth $1,700 and the combination of 11 and 23, let's just say that it's Minnesota that decides to trade up because, you know, Arizona sticks and takes Marvin Harrison Jr. and they offer you 11 to 23, you're basically getting a free third rounder. That's what the trade chart says. You should be giving away your first and your third to get 11 and 23. Instead, you say, no, we're not giving you the third. Just give us 11 and 23 if you want five. And so that's, I think you have to view that as a win. Like, that's a win for this front office. They have managed to win the trade value, you know, battle between these two teams in this exchange, if that makes sense.
No doubt it does. We'll stick with the wide receiver position because he had a great quote about Keenan. You're making $23 million and you get to play in Chicago. Who's got it better? And it's true.
Exactly.
Who's got it better, man? Yeah. It's business. He said it's very transparent. This is what it is. And you know, we talked about this last week. It's very transparent in terms of what the cap number was and what needed to be done to that position in order to be cap compliant and then kind of rebuild your roster and be healthy throughout, you know, the next several years when it comes to your cap. So he praised Keenan out the door. He said great deal for Mike, getting $15 million a year, but that leads to a different looking wide receiver room, and he talked about it.
really excited about Quentin, his opportunity, Josh Palmer, Darius, and then it's still, it's not even April yet. Now we got the draft coming, and free agency too. Free agency lasts, you know, before the draft, after the draft.
So, buddy, you've been very high on Joshua Palmer. I'm right there with you. Quentin Johnston, we hope can make that next lead. But Jim said what we said last week. It's March. The room still is TBD when it comes to free agency, the second and third wave, the draft. So don't panic yet just because two big wide receivers are out the door. Help is on the way.
Yeah, and I think he, you know, in that statement, he acknowledged the wide receiver room's not complete. I know that. We know that. But like you said, he acknowledged it's early. Every, you know, the first wave of free agency is not the only wave. You've got post-June 1st cuts for teams that may move on from a very good wide receiver. You know, the compensatory picks do not go past the, I think it's the Monday following the draft. So once you get to that point, you know, now your compensatory formulas, I don't think it's June 1st anymore. I want to say they changed it to be like the first, it's either like the Tuesday or the Monday after the draft, I think is what it's at. So now you don't have to pay into the compensatory pool for signing these guys post-draft. So post-June 1st cuts, compensatory pick, you know, adjustments, there, you know, there is plenty of work to do. He acknowledged that and said, it's early. It's early. We have still got a second wave of free agency. He mentioned the draft specifically. So I think for all the people that feel as though we've sort of been preaching, he doesn't care about wide receivers. He's not interested in populating. No, that's not what he's saying. He's just saying, slow down. We're good. We got you. We're good. Stop saying that we've got the worst wide receiver room in the league. You know, not fair to what we think they could be, these players could be. But at the same time, this is not a complete room yet. So let's wait until training camp August 1st before we start freaking out and castigating the front office and the coaching staff for what it looks like right now. Because they're not going to play a meaningful game for another 5 months.
After we did our pod last week, I really got to thinking about some of the stuff that we talked about with just regards to Justin's numbers and stats and players. And again, you're used to guys like Keenan and Mike being on the roster. And when I say this, I'm not taking anything away from those players. But I just go back to that Jacksonville game up 27-0. And would a Jim Harbaugh-led team blow that lead? Absolutely not. Like, it wouldn't happen. Austin had averaged like 2.7 yards per carry in that game. Mike Williams was not in that game. Keenan Allen, 6 catches, 61 yards. Again, I know that that's one game, but it's a playoff game. So I think that when you look at Jim Harbaugh coming in, you have to let Jim do what he does best, and that's remake the roster in his image, set a culture of winning, because Chargers fans are here to win. Like, I get that there hasn't been a ton of winning in January, you know, and over the last several years, but it's time to let Jim Harbaugh take the reins of this program and remake this roster. Jeff Miller asked him, he goes, do you think you can do it in a year? I think it's going to take longer than a year, but Jim says, I think we can, you know, and that's what's happening right now. The second and third wave of free agency, I think Jim and Joe Ortiz are sitting back, seeing what's out there, seeing what they can get at certain positions, and then really trying to stack these draft picks, develop these guys as soon as possible. So the culture is going to be set. And he even mentioned that someone else asked him about just, you know, are you guys there yet? He said, well, April 2nd. I can't wait to get April 2nd because that's when he can get his hands on the players. So there's a long way to go, but I don't know. I just look at some of the guys who were on this team who did incredible work and put up great stats, and just because they're gone doesn't mean you can't win.
100%. Just kind of going back to that game, right? You're up 27-0 and you find a way to you know, find defeat from the hands of victory. And it's one of the worst meltdowns in NFL postseason history. I mean, that's how bad it was. And so I want to give credit to at MIBPJ2, MIBPBJ2 is the Twitter feed that posted this, and it's great. He talked about the Chargers offense, run heavy, people, you know, concerned about Herbert and his involvement, or saying, what's the point of even having Herbert? Trade him away for multiple firsts if that's how you're going to run it and have a game manager, that sort of stuff. So he went through it and did a heck of a job, because he points out, yes, Harbaugh with the 49ers was run heavy. If you look at it in totality, fourth most run heavy offense. But if you break it down by halves, you will find that in the first half, he is league average in run percentage. What happens is, in the second half, in games that they are winning, the graph shoots through the roof. This is someone who is so good at run game execution that the second they had a lead in the second half, I'll read it verbatim, because he did such a perfect job of explaining it. It's as if they wait until halftime to decide whether to alter their game plan and then do so dramatically. I am comparing it here to other teams that span win percentage and rush percentage, wins and losses overlaid on the same plot. And when you look at it, imagine a wishbone from a turkey turned on its side. That's what it looks like. When they're winning, it spikes dramatically because they're so good at running the ball and running the 4-minute offense and making sure they pound that team into submission and maintain their lead. When they're losing, they throw it and they're trying to play catch up. But the point is this is a team that wants to run the ball to win the game. We're going to get a lead, and we're going to get it with a balanced offense. But the second we get it, when we build that lead and we have that advantage, no one's going to be better at holding it than we are. And that's why you need the offensive line, and that's why you need the run game, because you don't want to give the lead up. You want to be able to flip, and while the other team is chasing, you're taking the air out of the ball, you're pounding them into submission with run plays and successful run plays. And that was the formula in San Francisco. It wasn't, we're playing it safe from kickoff to the final whistle. No, it's second half is when it really kicked in. And God knows how many second halves and how many leads did Justin Herbert have in the fourth quarter on an offense when either the defense couldn't hold or the offense couldn't hold the ball long enough to spell the defense to make sure that that win was a win and it didn't turn into a loss.
Well, Money, what a great segue into our final soundbite from Jim Harbaugh talking about the offensive line.
I mean, if I asked you the question of, like, what position group depends on no other position group to be good, but every other position group depends on them to be good, you know, what position group is that? Offensive line. They're not relying on any other position group to be good. They go out and they're good. But yet every other position group relies on the offensive line to be good. And then the D-line, they'll be the ones that argue back, we don't need the offensive line to be good. Do you? Do you like when the offense has a 12-play drive and – you know, the field position. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. You're right. You know, it's like, so yeah, that building that, you know, kind of offensive line, that's exciting.
So I know we've said it the last few weeks, straight from the horse's mouth there. You think that offensive line play is important for the LA Chargers?
Yeah. Right. And it's a great point. And the second I saw it, I immediately wanted to get it out there, because it's not just, understand, folks, I see, I get it. I enjoy that you interact with me, but like the idea that I am hell bent on drafting an offensive lineman at number 5 or with the first pick or something, that's not what we're discussing here. All we're doing is talking about what we think this regime wants to do and how they want to build the team and how they believe it's going to be successful. And there's a reason why that soundbite, here we are, 3 days later from him saying it, and it's still making the rounds. People are still cutting it up. Coaches are cutting it up and sending it out. Big time media people in football are cutting it up and sending it out. Why? Because it's true. Because it rings true. Everything he said there is what, if you talk to football people, they will tell you is the foundation of success. Offensive line. If you cannot block, you cannot throw. If you can't block, you can't open up to run the ball. If you can't run the ball, you have three and outs, and now your defense is on the field. And that's the funny part about that last part of that clip. He's, you know, I love that he did the whole voice thing too, like, oh, and the defensive line's like, no, what about us? And he's like, yeah, you don't like 12 play drives? You don't like sitting over here and catching your breath and getting ready to go out there and pinning your ears back and going to get after someone because the offense just had a 12 play drive? Yeah, that's winning football. That's exactly what that clip is. That clip is winning football. And maybe he believes he already has it. Maybe on April 2nd, you said the date, Chris, he thinks that McFadden and Zion and Sawyer and Pipkins and Slater and Bozeman now, and he even talked about McFadden as potentially being a really great center.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Maybe he thinks he already has it. But if he doesn't think he has it, I can tell you right now what they're going to do. Because it's right there in that soundbite. He, in order for anything else to work, he needs to make sure his offensive line can be successful. So much of it is going to come down to his evaluation, Coach Devlin, Coach Hardwick's evaluation of what they believe this offensive line is and how successful it can be. And if they think it can be successful, then we can talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. But I think if they don't think it can be successful, then to me that clip says essentially what his football philosophy is and what likely they need to do.
He said, he goes, he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? So five positions on the offensive line. We know one locked, right? Rashawn Slater's locked. There are so many young guys on this roster, though, Money, that I believe like Zion Johnson, Jamari Sawyer, Trey Pipkins. He mentioned Jordan McFadden, what he liked towards the back half of the year. I firmly believe that he firmly believes he can get some more out of these young guys, and they haven't hit their potential yet. Now, they may be looking for a certain type of offensive lineman that may be not on the roster right now. And I know it's easy for fans for when we talk about offensive line to gravitate towards number five overall and be like, oh, no offensive lineman there. But if you trade out, there's a lot of good guys. You can get an extra pick. There's a lot of depth in the second and third rounds, maybe finding your future center or another just nasty guard or right tackle to complement Rashawn. So it's funny because when you talk about offensive line, it seems like there's a little bit of pushback thinking that that's going to be the pick at five, and there's really no consensus tackle at the top, even though it's really deep and there's a lot of potential options. But he said it, right? That's where it all starts, and that's how this, I think the trenches too in general, that's just going to be remade. You know, he mentioned he goes, I'm a coach. I'm thrilled I have Joey Bosa, and I'm thrilled I have Khalil Mack. Right. But those guys are on the back nine here in LA, and it's time to restock both sides of the lines, offensive and defensive lines. And I think you're going to find that the draft is going to be the number one well to go to when you're addressing both of those.
You know, the one thing to remember too is it's not a one pick draft. It's right now, as it stands right now, it's a 9-pick draft. And I would assume they want to make 9, 10, or 11. We've said that before. So remember, when it comes to their evaluation, it's going to be, what is my gap? You rarely will find, and it happens, don't get me wrong, there are players out there that have been taken in the third round or the second round that turn into really, really good players. But I think ultimately it's okay if we pass on a tackle here, if we're now out of the Alt, Fashanu, Fuaga, Latham, Mims, Guyton business, you know, those are the six that are expected to go in the first round, the tackles. Okay, what are we looking at in the second and third? What are our grades on this next tier of tackles compared to, all right, let's say we pass on Marvin Harrison Jr. and we miss out on Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze and Brian Thomas, kind of the ones that are projected to go in the first round. What is the gap in our grades between those guys and the names that I mentioned a little bit earlier, and Roman Wilson and Keon Coleman and Addie Mitchell and Troy Franklin and Xavier Legette? Like, to me, just look at, you can go year after year after year. And again, this is not my preference. Understand, I'm just pointing out how the draft works. Happened last year, Puka Nacua in the fifth, Rashee Rice in the second, Tank Dell before he got hurt in the second compared to Smith and Jigba, Quentin Johnston. You know, Zay was probably the best of you know, those, Jordan Addison. You know, those were the two that were the best of the first rounders, but were they better than Rashee Rice? Were they better than Puka Nacua? You know, and when you go year before, A.J. Brown, DK Metcalf, like, just go, there are a million of these guys, Cooper Kupp in the third, that get taken, and that rarely is the case. Keenan Allen in the third because of injury. Like, that's the thing is, you know, there are so many of those stories at wide receiver. There are very, very, very few at tackle. So and again, I bring it up because that's the debate they're going to be having in the room. That's what they're going to be talking about in that room when they're on the clock. And there's a quarterback there maybe in a team, or there's a team that wants Marvin Harrison Jr. and will trade up and give you a haul. And you feel like, all right, well, we can trade back to X spot and still get this tackle that we've got this grade on, and it's almost the same grade as the wide receiver. So, like, that's, again, remember, it's not just a one-pick draft. It's not just number five. It's what's the value of what we think we're going to get at 35, 37, and what's the value of our third rounder and our fourth rounder and our two fourth rounders now. So that's something important, I think, that you got to keep an eye on.
It's a great point. It's not a one-pick draft. It's not a one-year draft either. You're not just drafting for 2024. And that's the thing I think the Ravens have been masterful at is developing players, getting players maybe a year ahead of time and knowing that, okay, so for instance, let's just say the Vikings trade with the Chargers and you get some picks. You have 11 and 23 now. At 11, Dallas Turner may look pretty appealing, because Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa may not be here next year. So you pair him with Thule for the 100%. Next 5 years, right? 100%. There's certain positions where you're,
you know?
Yeah. There's certain positions, right, where you're set right now, but you're not going to be set in 2025 or 2026. And you want to have the best players you could possibly have on your roster. A corner, you mentioned Mitchell. That's another position that I think we should discuss, Money, because right now that corner room is incomplete as well. I think you could kind of put that on par with the wide receiver room as a work in progress. Yeah. And do you attack that in the draft? You can't attack everything in the draft. I realize that. But that is also a position that I think is very important to a Jesse Minter defense, that they're going to have to address in the second and third wave of free agency, and then potentially in the draft early.
No doubt. You know, and I think there's, you know, corner is a premium, corner, D-end, tackle, they're premium positions. They go high. You know, wide receiver, they go high. So what I would imagine is if they feel like they can end up getting two premium positions in the first round, like you said, if for some reason Minnesota, that's the one we have circled, I would be floored if Arizona didn't take that deal. If they don't get out of four to go back to 11 and get 23 in the process. If somehow it works out that the Chargers are able to do that, they'll do it in, it would take less than a second for them to say yes to that deal. And again, that's what you're talking about, Chris. It's not just the offensive side. You got to play defense too. You know, how did Buffalo and how did Baltimore stay in that game, those playoff games with the Chiefs, with good defense? They played them well. They played them tight. They made life hard on Patrick Mahomes defensively. You got to have corners to slow these wide receivers down. It's a wide receiver league. You better get someone that can slow them down. Think about how putrid the Jets offense was. And yet that defense kept them in all these games, you know, because they've got a lockdown, an absolute, you know, Sauce is a lockdown corner. And they had pass rush up front, you know, with Huff and Quinn and Williams. And so that, and yet that's a team where they win seven games, I think, like with that offense.
No business winning seven games with that offense. Issues
with that offensive line, but they did it because they dominated defensively. So remember, there's so many different directions they can go with this thing. And that's why I think they would love to get more picks, especially if they can pick up another top 50 pick. If they can trade out of five and get two in the top 50, to me, that's a jackpot for them, for what they believe kind of are a couple deep positions where they still feel like, hey, let's not go too far back. You know, I think you probably want to stay in like that top 15 range, maybe even top 13 range, in order to get one of those blue chips that you feel like is out there, either on the O-line, the corner, the end, the D-tackle, and Murphy. you know, and then pick up that extra top 50 pick and find another starter.
Before we go, you know, we'll dig into the draft with some analysts as we get closer to April 25th. But I want to talk to you about just this next wave or the next couple of months of free agency and guys who are potentially out there, whether it be a running back. I saw you retweeted the J.K. Dobbins news, which I think is very intriguing, yeah, considering the history that Joe Ortiz has with him. They needed the position. But, you know, corners, guys like Xavien Howard are still out there, and some other guys that are veterans that, you know, probably towards the end of their career, but somebody who could definitely fill a role and fill a need in 2024, possibly 2025. Anybody that catches your eye when it comes to this current roster and what's needed at a lot of different positions?
Well, I'll tell you, Chris, I'm gonna take that question. I'm going to flip it on its head. Because one of the things they don't need, the thing that we saw teams scrambling to get earlier this week and the Chargers did not have to worry about, was Cordarrelle Patterson. He was the most popular free agent in the NFL the second that kickoff rule passed. As soon as the new kickoff was instituted and you went from a 20% return rate to a 90% return rate in the XFL is what they have had since they used that particular approach to kickoffs. Tip of the cap to Tom Telesco and his staff, because you know what I said about Darius Davis in the fourth. I was like, you don't really have any kick returns anymore. I mean, it really is kind of paying a bit of a premium for someone who we don't know how much he's going to be used. Well, turns out, obviously, I was way wrong on that one. Guy was a monster in punt returns, returned one for a touchdown, was electric every time he touched the ball. So now to have the player that the players voted as the best returner in football last year on your team in a new kickoff era where you have a 90% return rate and you retain Ryan Ficken. Coach Harbaugh comes in, meets with Coach Ficken, recognizes, oh, we got one of the best special teams coaches around now. You're going to need that because it's a whole new world out there. And so to me, that is a huge benefit for the Chargers, because you're going to see, like, Xavier Worthy's stock went through the roof, you know, with that 4.21 40 out at the combine because of the new kickoff rules, because now that play is going to be put in, you know, is going to be reintroduced. So that's a big win for the Chargers to have Darius Davis on this team, now knowing how this is going to work moving forward, that the kickoff is back in play.
He took one to the house in preseason, like 2 days before or 2 days after we talked to him at training camp. You remember that?
Yeah. Absolutely. He's electric, man. He's one of the best in the league, and they've got him. So that's no doubt. That is. And I think really, Chris, you know, just when you ask, just to answer your question, then on top of that, I think it's going to be more the second wave. It's going to be the post-draft free agents. It's going to be the post-June 1st cuts. That's probably what we're – I think who's been signed has been signed. You know, that's why the Cordarrelle Patterson one was so funny, because it just happened like that. As soon as that rule passed – that dude was signed to a 2-year deal in no time at all. But outside of that, I think you're probably still going to see a lot of people slow playing it. You know, the Rams took that flyer on Tre'Davious White with the injury and believe, you know, have their doctors checked him out and thought that maybe he could get this thing back together. So if I had to guess, though, probably next wave is what we're going to be waiting on.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, it's really in the players, the ball's in the players' court for a lot of guys like Justin Simmons and Xavien Howard. It's where they want to go. They want to win a championship.
What kind of deal you want?
Exactly. Quickly on the Dobbins thing, though, I find him fascinating because he's 25. Take the injury risk out of it, because it is what it is. But if you take a flyer on a guy like that, his first year was awesome. He averaged like over 6 yards a carry, and since then, he has no mileage on him. He has 100 carries since that 2020 season. So you're knowing you're getting a guy who's coming off a major injury, especially for a running back. But if he looks as good as Dr. Neil Ostrich says he looks, and he can come into camp and compete, man, like, how about getting a guy on a discount that can give you productivity that you've seen in 2020? And, again, not a lot of miles on him since then.
He's got juice. He has got juice, man. If he's right, he's one of the best backs in the league. Just simply put, that's what he is. He is one of the best running backs in the league if he is right. And if because of the ACL and the Achilles, you know, and he has just been struggled with injury, if that means he's got to take a prove it deal, what better room to take it in? It's like, hey, you know, we're going to run the ball. You know what Greg Roman wants to do. You know what Jim Harbaugh wants to do. You know that Gus Edwards has always been to some degree a complimentary back, or a, you know, he's not necessarily a workhorse, and or at least he has not been. Now, maybe that's what their vision is for him, but this could be your best opportunity. Like, hey, man, I know these guys know how to run the ball. I know that Greg Roman knows how to call run. And I know that Gus is a great compliment to me because he was there the year that I had my breakout, you know? So it lines up if they're comfortable with it. And if the money's right, I absolutely 100% would be all for it. Like we've talked about it for weeks now. So hopefully that's one they can figure out. Now, who knows? Maybe a team just believes that he's going to totally be fine and they give him a big money deal and that takes it off the table. I could totally see that too. I mean, look what Saquon got. The guy played, you know, has played like four games in two different seasons. So
yeah,
never know. But yeah, I'm all for it. All for it.
All right. So guys, next week, we haven't done a Q&A in a while with our fans. So yeah, let's call. Let's do that next week. Hit up Me Your Money on the old X or Instagram or wherever you're hanging out on social media. And we'll do that. We'll answer some questions next week. And, you know, a lot to discuss as we get closer to the draft, but Jim gave us a lot of great material this week, and I think just further insight into what this Chargers team is all about entering this season and beyond. So anything else today, Bunny?
That's it, man. All good. Appreciate all yous. Appreciate all the comments on the YouTube and the Twitter and all that. Keep it coming. And like you said, next week we'll get to a bunch of them.
No doubt. Apologies for the audio, especially to Mad Money Smith. You have no idea what he's been through for the last for the first 20 minutes. And we'll get this set up all good for next Thursday. For Matt Money Smith, I'm Chris Harry. This has been Chargers Weekly.